G'day, my name's Ben. I'm part of the leadership team at CBBC. I want to talk a bit about Passover today. Now, if I start with a phrase like, on the night Jesus was betrayed, he took the bread, broke it, and said. Now, you've probably heard that sentence for a communion message a bunch of times. It's generally understood that Jesus was celebrating Passover with his mates. And during the meal, he modified the usual liturgy to talk about himself and his mission. If you happen to have some approximation of bread and wine on hand, maybe just put it to the side. We can all eat and drink together at the end. It might be a while. Put it to the side. If you don't have it ready and you want to grab something to join in, just pause the video. Go and grab something, whatever you have handy, it'll be fine. Now, some people might have a problem. They might get a bit upset with me saying that. But if what you have on hand is orange juice and chocolate cookies, it will do. The point is not that you have the right food, but that you have the right attitude. If you love Jesus and you want to participate, then it doesn't matter if you use actual wine and unleavened bread or last night's cold pizza and flat soft drink. It's fine. So pause the video, go and grab something if you want to, if you want to join in. Have it on hand, but just put it to the side. I don't want you to be holding it awkwardly through the whole thing because I'll talk for a bit first. Okay, so when I say Passover, what do you think of? What do you know about it? Now, if you're talking to your screen right now, well done. I appreciate your enthusiasm, but I actually can't hear you, so I'm going to have to just go on as if you said something really profound. So well done. Good job. Lots of Christians know about Passover, but we don't often really spend time thinking about it and what it means. If we want to know what it meant to Jesus, we have to not only look at what he did when he modified it, but also what it was before he did that, so that we can understand what the changes actually meant. So, let's take a minute to look at what the Passover was originally. Now, you can find all of what I'm going to say in Genesis and Exodus in your Bible. I'm going to do a galloping overview version so we can get to today's bit. So here's a quick history just to get you up to speed. So God chose Abraham and sent him to a special place that God had promised him and his descendants. In the Bible, it's usually called the Promised Land or Canaan, but it's pretty much what we would call modern-day Israel. Abraham had a son called Isaac and then a grandson called Jacob, whom God renamed Israel. That's where the name comes from. And it's his family we keep hearing about in the rest of the Bible as the children of Israel. So Israel, or Jacob if you prefer, had 12 sons, and one of them was Joseph, who is famous for having a jacket that inspired an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical. Now, as a side note, it may not have actually been a multicolored coat at all. The original word is really unclear, and it might have just meant expensive, ornate, or maybe striped. Not sure. Doesn't really matter. So if you know the story of Joseph, then you'll remember that his brothers hated him because he was daddy's favorite. He had a knack for hearing God's interpretations of people's freaky weird dreams, and he was either arrogant or naive enough to think it was okay to rub his brothers' faces in it. So they sold him as a slave to some folks that were headed to Egypt. Now this turned out to be a really good move on their part because he ended up becoming the Pharaoh's advisor, and when it turned out there was no food in the rest of the known world, they came to Egypt and already had a man on the inside. If you don't know the story, there is an animated movie called Joseph, King of Dreams, which is worth checking out while you're stuck in quarantine. I promise they're not paying me anything to say that, I genuinely enjoy the movie. And I think it's worth your trouble if you can find a copy of it. I don't know if it's on Netflix or not. Have a look, see, find out for me. So, the family of Israel stay in Egypt for some 430 years. And in the intervening time, the folks in charge no longer remember Joseph saving their collective tushies. And they become concerned by the fact that these Israelite foreigners have taken over a district called Goshen, where they keep their own customs and their own language, and they refuse to integrate into the local culture. These folks managed to organize things so that the Israelites, also called the Hebrews, or the people we would later on recognize as Jews, they become slaves to the Egyptians. But the Egyptians are still a bit scared of them anyway. Now we get to the story of Moses. Now, if you don't know Moses' story, there is also an animated movie called The Prince of Egypt, which tells his story really well, and it's definitely worth watching while you're in quarantine. And again, they're not paying me to say this. I actually really love this movie, and I love this one more than the other one. I think it's a better movie. But definitely worth checking it out. So anyway, one day, as a narrative way of showing just how horrible he is, the Pharaoh decides to thin out the Hebrew population by killing all the male babies less than 2 years old. Let that sink in for a moment. One of the babies that was supposed to be killed was instead rescued and grew up in Pharaoh's palace with the Egyptian name Moses. As an adult, Moses tries to dish out a little vigilante justice one day and kills someone. And he runs away into the desert and sets up a new life as a shepherd. But God calls to him. So there's this bush in the desert that seems to be on fire, but the green leaves are still green and nothing is getting burned. And the voice of God speaks from the bush and tells Moses that God has heard his chosen people calling to him to rescue them. And he has chosen Moses for the job. Moses protests. He says he's not a good public speaker. God tells him, fine, take your brother Aaron as well. God sends Moses and Aaron to visit Pharaoh to tell him that God of the people he's been using for cheap labor says he has to let them leave Egypt. Pharaoh doesn't want to lose his slaves, so he says no. So God sends a series of horrific plagues on the Egyptian people. And even though Pharaoh will agree to pretty much anything to make the plagues go away, once he has what he wants, he reneges on the deal repeatedly. So there were 10 plagues. And what a lot of people don't know is that each of the plagues represent the God of Israel humiliating an Egyptian god. The first plague was the plague of blood, in which Moses turned the Nile River to blood. This would probably be seen as a sign that their Nile god Hapi had been killed, or possibly Osiris himself, because it was said that the Nile was his bloodstream. The plague of frogs came next. Heket was the frog-headed Egyptian fertility goddess, and killing of frogs was forbidden in Egypt, which makes it particularly difficult to go about your business when there are thousands of them everywhere you step. The plague of gnats coming out of the dust was a direct insult to Geb, the god of the ground. The plague of flies took control of the insects away from Khepfi, the lord of insects. Apis, the bull god, would have been very offended that God sent a plague to kill the Egyptian livestock. A plague of boils should have been no problem for Sekhmet, with power over diseases, and Tot, who heals, but they could do nothing to stop it. Nut, the master of the weather, should have been able to stop a plague of hailstones big enough to kill any person or animal who wasn't under a solid roof. And Seth, the god of crops, was certainly not going to take a plague of locusts lying down if he had any power to stop it. Surely the sun god Ra would have something to say about all this. Nope. A plague of darkness shuts him down too. Finally, there was to be one further plague, one worse than all the others. The final Egyptian god was Pharaoh himself and his son. Each of the previous plagues happened to all the Egyptians, except in a few cases where some of the Egyptians heard it was coming and acted quickly, but curiously spared all of the Israelites and their district of Goshen entirely. This last plague, though, came with extra instructions. So I'm going to read from Exodus 12. While the Israelites were still in Egypt, the Lord gave the following instructions to Moses and Aaron. From now on, this month will be the first month of the year for you. Announce to the whole community of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, each family must choose a lamb or a young goat for a sacrifice, one animal for each household. If a family is too small to eat a whole animal, let them share it with another family in the neighborhood. Divide the animal according to the size of each family and how much they can eat. The animal you select must be a one-year-old male, either a sheep or a goat, with no defects. Take special care of this chosen animal until the evening of the 14th day of the first month. Then the whole assembly of the community of Israel must slaughter their lamb or their young goat at twilight. They are to take some of the blood and smear it on the sides and the top of the doorframe of the houses where they will eat the animal. That same night they must roast the meat over a fire and eat it along with bitter salad greens and bread made with no yeast. Do not eat any of the meat raw or boiled in water. The whole animal, including the head, legs, and internal organs, must be roasted over a fire. Do not leave any of it until the next morning. Burn whatever is not eaten before morning. These are your instructions for eating the meal. Be fully dressed. Wear your sandals. Carry your walking stick in your hand. Eat the meal with urgency, for this is the Lord's Passover. On that night I will pass through the land of Egypt and strike down every firstborn son and every firstborn male animal in the land of Egypt. I will execute judgment against all the gods of Egypt, for I am the Lord. But the blood on your doorpost will serve as a sign, marking the houses where you are staying. When I see the blood, I will pass over you. This plague of death will not touch you when I strike the land of Egypt. This is a day to remember. Each year, from generation to generation, you must celebrate it as a special festival to the Lord. This is a law for all time. For 7 days, the bread you eat must be made without yeast. On the first day of the festival, remove every trace of yeast from your homes. Anyone who eats bread made with yeast during the 7 days of the festival will be cut off from the community of Israel. On the first day of the festival, and again on the 7th day, all the people must observe an official day for holy assembly. No work of any kind may be done on these days except in preparation of food. Celebrate this festival of unleavened bread, for it will remind you that I brought your forces out of the land of Egypt on this very day. This festival will be a permanent law for you. Celebrate this day from generation to generation. The bread you eat must be made without yeast from the evening of the 14th day of the first month until the evening of the 21st day of that month. During those 7 days there must be no trace of yeast in your homes. Anyone who eats anything made with yeast during this week will be cut off from the community of Israel. These regulations apply both to the foreigners living among you and the native-born Israelites. During those days you must not eat anything made with yeast. Wherever you live, eat only bread made without yeast. Then Moses called all the elders of Israel together and said to them, "Go, pick out a lamb or a young goat for each of your families. Slaughter the Passover animal, drain the blood into a basin, take a bundle of hyssop branches and dip it into the blood. Brush the hyssop across the top and sides of the door frames of your houses, and no one may go out through the door until morning. For the Lord will pass through the land and strike down the Egyptians, but when he sees the blood on the top and sides of the door frame, the Lord will pass over your home. He will not permit his death angel to enter your house and strike you down." Remember, these instructions are a permanent law that you and your descendants must observe forever. When you enter the land the Lord has promised to give you, you will continue to observe this ceremony. Then your children will ask, "What does this ceremony mean?" And you will reply, "It is the Passover sacrifice to the Lord, for he passed over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt. And though he struck the Egyptians, he spared our families." When Moses had finished speaking, all the people bowed down to the ground and worshipped. So the people of Israel did just as the Lord had commanded through Moses and Aaron. And that night at midnight the Lord struck down all the firstborn sons in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn son of Pharaoh who sat on his throne, to the firstborn son of the prisoner in the dungeon. Even the firstborn of their livestock were killed. Pharaoh and all his officials and all the people of Egypt woke up during the night, and a loud wailing was heard throughout the land of Egypt. There was not a single house where someone had not died. Pharaoh sent for Moses and Aaron during the night. "Get out," he ordered. "Leave my people and take the rest of the Israelites with you. Go, worship the Lord as you requested. Take your flocks and your herds, as you said, and be gone. Go, but bless me as you leave." All the Egyptians urged the people of Israel to get out of the land as quickly as possible, for they thought, "We will all die." The Israelites took their bread dough before the yeast was added. They wrapped their kneading boards in their cloaks and carried them on their shoulders. The people of Israel did as Moses had instructed. They asked the Egyptians for clothing and articles of silver and gold. The Lord caused the Egyptians to look favorably on the Israelites. They gave the Israelites whatever they asked for, so they stripped the Egyptians of all their wealth. So, the Passover meal that the Jews celebrate is to remember this event. This is what usually happens. The family gathers for a special dinner. Guests might have been invited to come and share as well. Each person is greeted with a blessing and a gift, this might actually be washing their feet. The father, that's usually an elder male of the family, gives a call to worship and a prayer. And the first of four cups is passed around. This is the cup of sanctification, which is a symbol of joy, and it sets the time apart as a special meal to God's glory. A child brings a bowl of water so that each person can wash their hands as a sign of the need for cleansing. Everyone sings together. The father recounts the story of the Passover. The father brings a plate with symbolic foods on it. Everyone takes some greens and dip in salt water, which shows the new life apart from slavery and the passage through the Red Sea. Everyone takes a small piece of flatbread with bitter herbs on it to represent slavery. Everyone takes two small pieces of flatbread with a sweet apple haricot between to represent hard labor and the sweetness of freedom. Everyone takes a piece of boiled egg and dips in salt water to symbolize life and the tears of joy at being alive mixed with the tears of sadness over the death that came before. The second cup is passed. This is the cup of plagues. A full cup is a symbol of joy. So each person takes a piece of flatbread, and as each plague is named, they use a finger to drip some of their wine onto the bread to show their joy being depleted by the suffering of the Egyptians. The father now takes three pieces of flatbread wrapped in a cloth. He explains that they must use flatbread because the Israelites did not have time to wait for yeast to rise during the first Passover meal. The middle piece is broken, and the larger half is hidden away. This is probably when Jesus said, "This is my body broken for you." And they all drink the second cup. The father recounts the crossing of the Red Sea. The third cup, the cup of redemption, is passed around. This is likely the cup that Jesus was holding when he said, "This cup is my blood." Then all share a song and a psalm. Then the fourth cup is passed. This is the cup of praise. There's an extra place set at the table. They acknowledge it here, as if a guest is missing. This is a place set for Elijah. The Old Testament prophet Malachi foretold that he would come to announce the coming of the Messiah. The children will go and check and see if Elijah has come. Each year they say, no, but maybe next year in Jerusalem. Finally, the family begin their meal of roast lamb, which reminds them of the lamb that gave its life to save them from the angel of death when he passed over them. And also a sweet dessert after to remind them of the promised land, a land of milk and honey, which God rescued them into. Now, as I read the story of the first Passover this week, I couldn't help but think of our church families having dinner of an evening, each of us in our own homes with this modern plague going on outside, and each of us praying that this sickness will pass over our house. Now, I don't want to suggest that God brought this plague on our society as some kind of punishment, although I'm sure there are folks out there claiming pretty much that already anyway. I also don't want to suggest that you all need to get some hyssop branches and a bucket of lamb's blood to ward off COVID-19. I mean, I can't tell you what to do, but if you do try that, don't be surprised if your neighbours try to have you committed to a psych ward. What I do find myself thinking here is, this must be just a little of what it was like for the Egyptians when the plagues hit. And suddenly all their water supply turned to blood. They all started panicking and trying to dig new wells because they had no guaranteed water supply. Suddenly their usual employment was overturned because there were frogs everywhere. Suddenly their family members started coming down with an illness they couldn't do anything about. Suddenly they were all stuck inside with their families, unable to go outside, while the hailstorm killed what remained of their livestock and any people who rushed out to rescue them. Suddenly the crops that represented their only remaining livelihood was utterly ransacked by locusts. And then the sun went out. It must have been utterly terrifying. I can see why they were so keen to give the Israelites their gold and silver and send them on their way. But what about Jesus? What was he doing when he shared this meal? The Passover as a meal, it's a meal about remembering. The people were commanded to do it every year and remember what the Lord had done to rescue them. It's clear that Jesus went to his crucifixion with his eyes open. He knew it was time for him to suffer and die, and he wanted to make sure that his followers had something to connect with that would help them understand what was happening. Maybe they wouldn't get it right away, but this meal was something they would be doing every year, and what he did to change it would stick in their minds, and years to come they would remember. Jesus took the role of the father and the host of the meal. And after he recounted to them the story of the Passover, and that he's in the symbolic food, Jesus took the three pieces of flatbread, which are called a unity. He removed the middle one. We have to assume that he saw here the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. The middle one he broke and said, "This is my body broken for you." He gave it to them to eat. This was a departure from the usual liturgy. Usually the father would break the middle bread and put the smaller half back. Then he would hide the larger half somewhere nearby to be sought out by the children and shared at the conclusion of the meal. Some people suggest that this was always supposed to be a sign to the Jews that the Messiah was coming and they should seek him. Next, there was a cup of redemption, which Jesus also changed. All four cups were traditionally filled with red wine to symbolize the blood of the lamb that had given its life to protect the family in the house during the passing over of the angel of death. This cup usually is one which they drink to the joy and thankfulness that God had rescued them from being slaves in Egypt. Once they crossed the Red Sea, they were on their way to the Promised Land and the fulfillment of God's promise to them. They were also about to receive the Ten Commandments and begin to understand what kind of life God meant them to have. Jesus instead told them this cup was his blood. He was taking on the identity of the Lamb, that he would give his life to save everyone from slavery to their own desires and bring them into a new relationship with God. So in 1 Corinthians it says, "On the night when he was betrayed, the Lord Jesus took some bread and gave thanks to God for it. Then he broke it in pieces and said, 'This is my body which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way, he took the cup of wine after supper, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant between God and his people, an agreement confirmed with my blood. Do this in remembrance of me as often as you drink it.'" We live in a world where people are afraid. But Jesus faced his own death with no fear, because he loves us and willingly gave himself to rescue us. We have a God who would go to any length to rescue us and bring us to himself because he loves us, and he has demonstrated that nothing can stand in his way. Romans 8:38 says, "I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from God's love, neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither our fears for today, nor our worries about tomorrow. Not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love." So let's eat and drink together. As Julie would say, go in peace to love and serve the Lord. Have a great week. See you later.